Hello there, friends and listeners. Welcome to another episode of The Rad Dad Show. Before we begin, I just want you to know that this is a cross episode with my other podcast called Smash Notes. So if you're a Smash Notes listener, chances are you've already heard this podcast before. But if this is your first time listening to Mubs, welcome. Also, if you're not a Smash Notes subscriber, I highly recommend smashnotes.com. You can find notes for this episode and many other podcasts that you love and enjoy. Today I have a special guest on the show. His name is Mubs Iqbal, and many know him as the guy who can't stop making things on the internet. He was 2016 Product Hunt Maker of the Year, and to date, just over the last couple of years, he's made over 80 different products. Mubs is a developer, a dad, and just a very positive person with a very good attitude towards making things. So today, in this special episode, we talk about his addiction to making awesome things on the internet, how he does it, how he stays motivated, how he does it with his family, and what it takes to create awesome products nonstop. So you were Product Hunt Maker of the Year in 2016. That's how I know a lot of people know you by.
Yes.
But tell us, who are you?
Wow, that's a deep question to start things off with.
But you just throw them off right off the deep end. Yeah.
I actually am just somebody who loves to make applications. So I've been writing code since I was about 8 years old. And so it's something I really love to do. And so I went to school for it as well. And then I got a job as a web developer when I left university. So I'm self-taught, but I also went to school for it because I loved it that much. And then I've been working in the industry for over 20 years as well. But I also love it as a hobby, so I do it in the weekends and evenings and all that kind of stuff too. So yeah, that's kind of why people are kind of a little bit surprised when I tell them how many things I've worked on. But one, I've been doing it for a really long time, and two, I just love it. So I do it anytime I have some spare time. That's what I will be working on.
But hold on, we just discussed this before we started the podcast. Yep. You've got two kids. Where do you have spare time?
Well, I tell people that my secret superpower is that I don't need much sleep. And so what I used to do is I used to wait till the kids went to sleep, you know, like 8 and 9 o'clock. Now they're a little bit older, they stay up a little bit later too. And then so like 10 o'clock at night, I would sit down and start my hobby, and I would work till 2 or 3 in the morning. But it's not really work, right? Because it's stuff that I'm doing because I want to. But yeah, I would be up till 2 or 3 in the morning, and then when they woke up at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, I would be awake too.
Oh wow, you really don't need a lot of sleep.
Yep.
I've had a friend like that in college, and you guys are rare. Being able to sleep for 3-4 hours a night and still function, that's incredible. I mean, it gives you like a whole extra day.
Yeah, I mean, as I'm getting a little bit older now, I will admit I'm starting to go to bed a little bit earlier now, but I'm still like normally up till 1 o'clock in the morning, and then my oldest daughter just started high school, and she has to be on the school bus at 6:30 in the morning now. So I kind of have to wake up earlier than I used to as well. So I go to bed a little bit earlier so I can wake up a little bit earlier as well.
Well, it's good. She's helping you live a healthier lifestyle.
Yes.
But, you know, how do you find the motivation? And, you know, folks can check out your website. It's iworkedon.com, right, where you list all the things that you worked on. And it's an endless scroll of things that you've created. And it's amazing because if you go on maker communities, there's always questions of like, how do I keep myself motivated? You know, I launched this one project and it's taking up so much of my time. And it's just like people complaining all over the place. And here we are, not even, what are we, like, what month is it now?
September.
We're like three quarters yeah, through 2009, and you've already got a list of 10 things you've created. So, yes, you know, that's like once a month. Most people complain about doing one thing in a year.
Right.
So how do you find the energy to do all of this?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, one, it's something I love to do, right? So when you're doing something that you like and love to do, I think, you know, it's very easy to find the sort of time and the energy for it. The other thing that I tell people whenever they ask me about this stuff is, you know, I do things that I enjoy outside of computers as well, right? So if you look through my list, there's a site about football. There's a site about, actually, I probably worked on some other things, but yeah, there's a site about movies in there and sort of other things. So, you know, I love to watch movies as well. Usually I'm working and watching a movie at the same time. But I love to watch football on the weekends as well. And so I build things about things that are interesting to me as well. So in that way, I'm not just building things because, oh, that'll be a cool app to build because I'm going to make lots of money from it. You know, and then you don't find the energy for it because it's not really an interesting thing. I build things around topics and things that I find interesting, which adds energy into kind of what I want to do as well.
So how easy it is for you to code at this point?
I always tell people coding's the easy bit, right? So when you want to build an application, when you want to build something, when you want to make something, one, the hard part is the idea. Like, what's the thing that you want to build, right? Figuring that bit out is pretty hard. And then letting people know that you've actually made something is the other hard bit, right? Like, because you can make things, you know, easily these days. You don't even have to use code anymore. You can point and click and make a site, you know, in a matter of hours if you want to. But then what? You know, like, nobody's going to know that you've made it. Nobody's going to be around to see it and check it out and all that kind of stuff. So making stuff's the easy bit. Knowing what to make is hard, and then finding some way to tell people that you've made something is the other hard part.
So then, what do you think of this whole no-code movement that's materialized in the last couple of years?
Oh, I think it's fantastic. I mean, because I love to code. So that, I mean, that's just what I've been doing for the last, you know, like I said, I started when I was 8 years old. So I've been doing it almost my entire life. But I like to make things, right? Like, software and code for me is a tool that allows me to do other things. And so if you have a tool that allows you to make a website, will allow you to solve the problem that you're trying to solve, I think that's absolutely fantastic, because at the end of the day, we're just trying to solve problems. We're trying to make our lives easier. We're trying to find information or whatever it is that website is supposed to do, whether it's code or there isn't any code. I don't think it really makes any difference whatsoever. As long as you're trying to solve the problem and you can solve that problem for people or you can solve it for yourself, that's really all that I think that's the important bit there.
So for you, is it mostly trying to solve the problems that you see around you, or is the goal to turn one of these into a bigger startup when you find which one really makes more sense to become a startup?
I think people don't value, people always talk about product market fit a lot, which is like, you know, what's the product that the market is looking for? I think they ignore the founder product fit a lot, which is also, I think, equally, if not more important when it comes to starting a company, starting a business, finding something that you want to work on for 5 years or 10 years or however long you're going to be in that company for, is really important. So for me, it's been a long exercise of let's just make something cool, something that I enjoy. And if it's something that the market is looking for right now, then that's absolutely fantastic, and that's the thing I'll work on. If not, it's something that I need, it's something that I want, it's something that solves a problem for me or friends of mine, and then that's absolutely fine too. It doesn't need to be the next big startup. It doesn't need to be the next unicorn or anything like that.
That's great. I mean, that's great attitude, because this is just an extension of your hobbies, right? You can build stuff, so you build stuff, and then you work on it. And you know, a lot of other people might have other hobbies, but this is yours, and that allows you to create a ton of really useful content.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to kind of keep in mind why you're doing these things, right? Like, obviously, if you're stuck in a job that you hate and you want to do your own thing because you don't want to find a new job, then yeah, then build something that you think, you know, will be able to sustain you and kind of pay you a salary and all that kind of stuff. But if you're happy doing the job that you're doing, but you like to code or you like to make things, then just make things as a hobby. You know, just enjoy the process of creating. I think, you know, I think we've lost that to some, you know, with kind of all this hustle, you know, with all this side hustle stuff and all that kind of stuff, it's now become that your hobbies are supposed to make you money, and we're kind of losing the enjoyment of our hobbies now. And I think it's important to kind of enjoy yourself. And if it makes you money at some point, that's awesome. But if not, at least you've enjoyed yourself as well.
You're clearly enjoying yourself doing all of this, and I can hear it, you know, in your voice. But have any of the projects in the past made you money?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, and if you look through that old sort of all that list on I worked on, I mean, you'll see that maybe at least half of those are things that I built with other people, because other people came to me and said, "Hey, I've got this idea, but I don't know how to code, and this isn't something you can do without code. You know, can you help me out? You know, can we start something, and we'll kind of see what happens with it?" And so, yeah, there's probably three or four in that list that are still operating as kind of startups and companies. They're, you know, they're employing anywhere from one to two to, I think one of them has eight people working on it. And so absolutely. And there's been other ones that I built the site. I kind of operated it for like a year or so, and then, you know, didn't want to operate it anymore because it, you know, wasn't really a hobby anymore. And so I've sold the site, and kind of stuff like that too. Absolutely.
Well, that's great. And I mean, I guess I'm just looking through the list since we started talking about it. And I love how some of them are kind of bigger projects and some of them are fairly simple, but also unique and useful things. Like I'm looking at this, how much is a Bitcoin worth?
Right, yes.
.com. And I mean, how many people are there? Well, you probably know because you probably have analytics on this, right? But people are clearly Googling, like, or at least in the heydays of Bitcoin, they were like, right, how much is a Bitcoin worth today? I mean, Silicon Valley had that whole episode about... Guilfoyle, you know, tracking the price, like, and this is great. Like, even if people are not buying Bitcoin from your website, they might buy something else that will give you like affiliate dollars. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that was one of those, you know, I that was probably at the time where I was kind of interested in the whole. I was more into crypto as well, right? So that's the, again, that's the idea of, oh, what's my, you know, what's interesting to me at this moment? Oh, you know, I'm watching Ethereum and Bitcoin and seeing how much they're all kind of worth. But isn't it, you know, wouldn't it be cool to make something in this space as well that I can share with other people as well? So it's another extension of taking the things that you like to do, but turning them into kind of a little side project as well.
So let's talk about that side project. Your latest invention is PodHunt.
Yes.
So short for Podcast Hunt. How did that idea come about?
That's an idea that's been around for a really long time. So originally, when Product Hunt, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, actually used to have a bunch of other categories. So rather than just sort of applications and software and stuff, they used to have a game category, a book category, and a podcast category as well. And after a while, they kind of operated that for a little bit, but they couldn't quite make it fit in with their main software category. So they kind of shut down all the other ones so they could focus on what they actually started out to do, which, you know, to make sort of application stuff more discoverable. And so when they shut that down, I had some friends who would kind of every few months would kind of say, "Hey, we kind of missed that podcast kind of hunting thing. You should make a site for it." And for the longest time, I was like, "No, I don't think it's, you know, I didn't feel like it was the right thing to kind of do." But for some reason, I was talking to some friends back in July, and they kind of raised it again, and I don't know, it just felt like it was the right time, that everything was kind of positioning itself in terms of where the podcasting industry was and where I was in terms of what I wanted to build and kind of things like that, and it all just seemed to line up, and so I started working on it.
That's awesome. How long did it take before you like launched the first version?
So I started working on it on July the 25th, I think it was. And I think in about 2 weeks I had like a soft launch that I could kind of show some friends who were the ones who kept asking me about it. And then in about 3 weeks, so I think actually August 20th was when I did like the official launch. So it didn't take very long. I mean, it's just like a few weeks. And again, it's a few weeks working in evenings and weekends and things like that. So, you know, had I been doing it full time, it would have been a lot quicker as well.
Yeah, but you're almost doing the Google 20%, the Friday dedicated to other projects.
Yes.
I wonder, does your full-time job let you just take Friday off and work on something cool for them, or not yet?
No, I mean, it's kind of weird. Just kind of like what we talked about earlier with not needing any sleep. I feel like I have that 20% anyway. It's like I don't need to take the time off, because having that extra 3 or 4 hours of work a day actually adds up to about that extra 20% anyway.
Right, but imagine they actually gave you a Friday and said, build cool stuff here.
Well, we do that internally, actually. So I work for an agency down in New York City right now, and so we have a lot of client work that we do, but occasionally we'll just take some time off and just kind of work on some internal projects instead. And so we don't do the full 80-20 that sort of Google had, but yeah, having like these internal hackathons and things like that is pretty interesting as well.
The other day I was listening to a podcast with Paul Graham, the founder of Y Combinator, but it was a podcast from 2009 where he projects what success of Y Combinator would look like in the future. And at the time, they were pretty humble, saying, we hope that the third of our startups will do well, yada, yada. So for you, might have to pause for 1 second. So given how many things you're doing, what's your projection for your project success, and specifically for the recent one, for the pod hunt, like what would make you really happy? If it got to a certain point,
For me, I go in with very low expectations, right? Like one, I'm not spending, other than my time, I'm spending very little, I'm not a VC funded company that's got millions of dollars that they've invested in these ideas and things like that. So my expectations are really low, because I haven't spent anything really valuable other than my time. So from that standpoint, whatever upside there is, it's fantastic. But I think for Pod Hunt, it's felt like a different project for me. Even though I built it pretty fast and launched it pretty quickly, it feels like a longer term project in itself. Like it doesn't feel like it's just one of these that I will launch and then kind of leave on the side of the road, as it were. But I think in this particular case, I can see myself working on it in the next few years and continue to add features and hopefully build an audience around it. It's one of those, I don't really know what to expect, because I don't know what's going to happen with the podcasting industry as a whole. It seems to be growing and growing and growing, and you're getting celebrities doing podcasts and people are spending a lot of money on sponsorships and advertising and things like that. So I'm hoping I can kind of catch that wave as well and kind of just ride along. Like I said, I don't really go in with like huge expectations or anything like that.
Well, that's great attitude, because that allows you to both maintain flexibility and keep building without all these expectations, and without perhaps quitting too soon, right? Just because you didn't hit a certain milestone, because hey, you don't have certain milestones you want to hit right in the particular time. That's amazing. But just one quick thing, talking about celebrities doing a podcast. Well, case in point, you're on the podcast. And sponsors, I just want to quickly talk about the sponsors for this podcast. It's a little phone called Palm. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to have one.
Sweet. So for our listeners, we can talk about, your experience. It's a palm.com, palm.com. And if they use a code at checkout, RADDAD, RADDAD, they can get $50 off for this phone. I just got it not so long ago, played around with it, and I loved it because it's tiny, so you don't have any desire to put a lot of apps on it. It runs Android. It's pretty speedy. It's got a camera and everything. But to me, the amazing part was I didn't need to put any apps on it because for me, it was just a phone. I could check my email if I had to. I could check my calendar. I could text people, take phone calls, and nothing else. And it was so zen. What was your experience?
So I had the original Palm when they first came out. So when it was running its own OS, so it was running like WebOS and stuff. So it was actually the first smartphone that I owned. So I used to have like the old little Nokia phones that had the little keypads on them and stuff. And then when I went and got my first smartphone, I used to have a Palm. And they had like the little slide out keyboard and stuff like that as well. So they were really awesome, and I loved the actual OS itself. I used to love the sort of interface that it had. I know it's obviously changed now because of, you know, it's running Android and stuff, but I just love the idea of it being I think they focused a lot on making it usable for what it's supposed to be used for, and I think that's part of the issues with a lot of the iPhones and Androids is you just don't know what you're going to be using it for. So they've tried to cram as much into it as they can. And it's just kind of made them, I mean, it's nice to have in your pocket, but you don't treat it like a phone anymore, which I think is unfortunate.
Oh, you mean that we don't treat iPhones as phones anymore? They're
right. They're basically just laptops in your pocket almost.
Exactly. And we talked about having kids, you know, every time I go to a playing ground with my kids, like I don't want to interact with a phone. And with Palm, I'm able to actually just keep it in my pocket. And if my wife calls me, I can pick it up. But otherwise, it's so little and doesn't have anything. So it forces me to just be with my kids. But when I have a phone, not only I get distracted, but sometimes they also go, oh, hey, daddy, can I like look at that picture or use that app or whatever? And like, I don't want that to exist. And especially with the new iPhones that just came out, I mean, they have some kind of new beautiful camera, but otherwise you're paying $1,500 for like a lap. Like you said, it's a laptop in your pocket, except the screen is tiny.
Right.
So I think for people who only have one device, like having an iPhone or a Pixel or, you know, like a fancy Android device makes sense because it's your only device. But if you can afford multiple devices in like 2020, it totally makes sense to have a phone that is just a phone.
Yep.
So again, it's palm.com. If you guys want to get a $50 off, it's RadDead is the code that you'll have to use at checkout. And you know, you get a cool phone that's the size of a credit card. Give it a try. But now, Mops, back to you. A ton of different projects, you know, kids. You said you work from home. Can you talk about that? Like, how does that work? You've been doing this for like 20 years.
Yeah, my first job, I was in New York City, and I was moving out of New York City. I went to live in Boston for a year. But as I was leaving New York, I interviewed with a company, and they had an office in New York City. And I said, I love the company. I love what you guys are doing, but I'm not going to be in New York City for the next, at least for the next year. And they said, oh, you're only going up to, you know, basically it's like an hour flight away. They said, well, that's cool. Why don't you just work out of your house when you move? And then, you know, we'll kind of see how it works out. So in the summer of 2000 was when I had my first remote job. And I loved it so much, I've been doing it ever since.
Summer of 2000, was it before or after the crash?
It was, so the first crash happened in like April of 2000, I was actually working at a small internet company which did get shut down. That's the one that I kind of worked at. And so when I was leaving that company, I was looking for a new job. I was going to just move up to Boston and find a job up there, but then a friend of mine recommended me for a job at a company in New York City. And so I interviewed with them, you know, just because, you know, because I did, because it was recommended by a friend of mine. And it worked out well.
That's awesome. I mean, I guess nowadays a lot of people would say that they're doing remote because it also helps them lower the costs. You don't have the office. You have to do a lot more paperwork, but you don't actually have to put people in a physical location and spend like millions of dollars in office. And I guess maybe you lucked out that it was the summer of 2000 that people were also trying to figure out how to be nimble, right? And to them, you were a great coder and it was important for them to retain you. So like they'd rather you work from home than having to like find somebody else who's not as good.
Yeah. And to some degree, they took a chance on me too, because it's not something that they had, you know, tried before. It was something completely new to not have somebody in the office. Obviously now it happens all the time now, but you know, back then it was something entirely new. But obviously finding talent was tough now, and it was tough back then as well. So when you do find somebody that you think will be a good fit into your team and everything, them saying, you know, that I want to work remotely is not a deal breaker then, and it's not a deal breaker anymore, I think.
That's great attitude, because that's the only way I want to work. And, you know, the other day I was thinking of going event, and I live in Bellevue, Washington, and it was across the bridge in Seattle, and in traffic, no traffic, 15 minutes. Traffic, 55 minutes. Right. And I just thought for a minute of driving 55 minutes in traffic, and I was like, okay, I can't do this. Like, I literally just not emotionally ready.
Yep.
And, you know, people do this every day, and just like so distracting to your life. Why not have everyone work remotely? I don't understand, but hopefully we'll get there, right?
Yeah, my first job when I was still back in England, I got it after university. I would have to drive. Well, it's again one of those things. Like, depending on when I left home, it would either be a 25-minute drive, or if I left at the wrong time because of traffic, it would be more like an hour and 15 minutes that I would have to sit in the car. So that's one of those situations where it's like, well, I'm going to leave home earlier so I can get to work earlier so I can avoid the traffic. And then so after about 3 months of that, I was just like, this is ridiculous. And I actually ended up changing jobs, not just because of that, but I think that was one of the reasons that I was like, well, I'm not really tied to this, and having this kind of weird commute kind of just made it even more important that I found a new opportunity as well.
Well, it sounds like waking up early stuck with you, and that's really the thing.
Yes, it did.
I guess if there's one thing that people who are not your close friends should know about you, what do you think that is?
Well, I think the thing that also sets me apart from a lot of other people is I do tend to have a very positive attitude about things, right? Like, I don't really think about failure a lot. I've obviously failed at things a lot over the years, because obviously you've seen with 80 projects and things, they can't all be a success, right? And you launch projects and they don't do well, or, you know, or anything like that. But I think you can always learn from anything that happens in your life. I think you can learn from it. And if you can learn from it, then it's not a failure at all. And I think that kind of attitude kind of helps, not just with the side project, but it helps with being a dad, and it helps with if you have a regular job too. I mean, like, you know, you can learn from anything that happens. And so, I try not to think about things being successes and failures, and, you know, what did I learn? What did I accomplish? And sort of that kind of thing, I think is like super important kind of attitude to have.
It's fabulous. And you said your kids are 11 and 15 right now?
Yes.
So the 15-year-old is going to college soon. Or is it a boy or girl?
It's a girl, yes.
Girl, yeah, you know, just in terms of addressing her. But, I mean, you're working from home. You're doing all these cool projects. You have a full-time job that you love. As a dad and a maker, what do you think... How are you teaching your daughter, the older one, or both of them, I guess, how are you teaching your kids about their future and, you know, how to find their own passion? What do you think they'll end up working on, or you'd like to see them working on?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've tried not to have any expectations because I think it's important for them to find what they're passionate about and what they want to do with their lives. Because, you know, obviously I could say I like to code, but nobody else in my family likes to code. Like, I'm the only person who writes any code in my entire family, right? So I'm not going to push that on my kids, because if they don't like to do it, then I want them to find whatever they're passionate about. And I think the sort of main thing that I've tried to put across on my kids is that just try lots of different things. So they used to dance when they were younger. They play soccer, they played a bunch of other sports, you know, they do art, they do painting and drawing and things like that too. So it's just try lots of different things, because until you try a lot of these things, you're not going to know what you really like, and you're not going to know what you don't like as well. And I think just being open to try new things and to experiment, I think is the best way that you can find out what you really are interested in. And once you find out what you're interested in, then you can, you know, spend as much time as you want on that. But until you know what that thing is, just try everything.
That's a really good advice. And, you know, I love watching other parents on playgrounds, and I feel like it starts early. And I bet you would be the opposite of this behavior. Very often parents want to tell their kids exactly how to take a step, exactly, you know, how to climb up a thing or slide down a thing. And it always amuses me because it takes all the fun out of playgrounds from 2-year-olds.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, obviously you want them to be safe, but outside of that, you know, yeah, it's a slide. You want to come down front ways, back ways, you know? I mean, yeah, as long as you're safe, I don't really care. I mean, you're going to do what you want to do because you're a kid, and, you know, and that's okay. Yeah, I think having rules is fine if you want to keep people safe. But outside of that, the rules should just be about that, right? Like, it's not about having rules for everything. It's about having rules to keep your kids safe. And then outside of those very extreme rules, just let them explore, let them find out what's good, what's bad, kind of on their own as well.
And it's great to see you as adult doing that in your professional life, because so many people stop, you know, as adults, you're supposed to be mature and doing that one thing that is your job. And I feel like you're still very playful and you're just saying, nope, I'm just going to, you know, this is my sandbox. I'm just going to play with it. Like, well, actually, literally sandbox, right? That's where the name comes from.
Yes.
For some reason, adults stop treating it that way. It's like there's serious things like work and
Yeah, I mean, I think you still, I mean, yeah, you can get old and yes, you can have responsibilities and you have to take care of your family and everything like that. But I like to have fun all day, every day. Like, I don't want to wait till like that 2 weekends or those 2 weeks a year where I'm on holiday to have fun. If I can have fun 52 weeks of the year, then my entire life's a holiday.
That's beautiful attitude. I mean, I hope a lot of people can hear this and, you know, wake up from the dream of a life and find the second life worth living. You know, I feel like we should end here, but I do want to ask one more question.
Okay.
And that's, you know, given that you are maker of the year on Product Hunt, when you do your things, are you part of any other community outside of Product Hunt? Does that help? And, you know, what do you find in those places?
I'm not. They go up and down. There's a few other Slack groups and things like that I was that I've been a part of where it's kind of helpful to get early feedback and thoughts from other people and on terms of what you've been working on. So that can be helpful. And obviously, if you get stuck on something, having access to people who have a particular skill, you know, who might be able to help you solve that problem is really helpful. But you know, I like to move fast. So obviously when you work with other people, it's great having that kind of network that you can talk to and have ideas you can send back and forth and sort of that kind of stuff is really nice. But working on your own, you get to move really fast, right? Because you can just build whatever you think it needs to be built. You can make it look how you want it to make it look. So I mean, I do tend to hang out on a few of those, but it's mostly just to see what other people are working on and, you know, to see if I can help them in kind of any way, more than the other way around. It can help, like, you know, obviously if you're building something in the podcasting space, be a part of the podcasting community, right? So talk to other people who are doing podcasting, who are not doing podcasting, but want to, you know, see what pain points they have, you know, see what you can do to help them. And maybe that will give you an idea for an application as well. So that's normally why I think a lot of people hang out in those kind of communities as well. But in terms of a general maker community, I mean, it's really just Indie Hackers is probably the sort of other place I really hang out a lot. So indiehackers.com is kind of a forum and community where I hang out, I think.
Awesome. So if people want to ask you questions or maybe connect with you to see if you can work on an app together, if you're open to that, I guess they can reach out to you on Twitter and I'll put a link, or find you on Indie Hackers, right?
Yeah, either one. Yeah. Twitter's the place I hang out the most, I think.
It's mubs.me is the shortest URL.
Yes.
Great website.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. It's just mobs.me. That's awesome. It. So they'll find you there. And
yeah, it's got all the links there to kind of all the other sites and things on there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And folks, if you want to see everything he's working on, it's iworkedon.com. And there's a list of 80 projects. It's really fascinating.
So that's funny. So iWorkedOn is actually, it's actually just a site that anybody can, well, actually, I still have a password on it, but it's actually meant to be a site where anybody can sign up and actually list all of the things that they've worked on as well. So it's kind of a side project to keep a track of all of my side projects, but kind of other people can use it to do the same.
Yeah, but you thing realize as well. how inferior everyone's going to feel when they sign up.
Well, that wasn't my plan.
It's like, can you beat Mubs? And there's two buttons, no and no. There's your choice.
I believe anybody can do anything that they really want to, that they set their mind to. Now, obviously, if I see people trying to challenge me like that, I might take them up on that too, though.
Here, folks, you heard, there is a challenge. You can try and beat Mubs at number of projects. So one every 3 days for the rest of the year. You can get there.
Yep.
Mubs, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. You're a fascinating person. I'm glad you're having so much fun building all of this. And, you know, thanks for reaching out and for sharing your story, and hopefully people get inspired and jump in the arena and build more stuff just like you do.
Thanks for having me on. But yeah, I mean, really that's why I share a lot of the information and a lot of the kind of why and how I make stuff, is that I'm kind of hoping that other people will kind of hop on as well and kind of start their own thing. Cause I think the more people who are making things, the more problems we start to solve, and I think if we solve problems, we make the world a better place for everybody.
That's it for this episode of Rad Dad. Thank you for listening. Now let's go make some stuff.